Divine intervention, preparation for the great flood and the big boat. I read from Patriarchs and Prophets, page 67, regarding advance warnings for the coming of the flood, that there would be an important series of historic events, and that the coming of the flood was revealed to Adam way back there in the very early period. It was revealed not only to Adam after the flood fall, but it was revealed to Enoch. And I read in the book of Jude, chapter 1, verse 14, that Enoch, in the seventh generation from Adam, prophesied regarding these coming events. Through holy angels, God revealed to Enoch his purpose to destroy the world by a flood. God also gave Enoch visions regarding the coming of the great flood and subsequent events as well. And interestingly, as I mentioned on the previous occasion, God showed Enoch the coming of the flood. Yes, Enoch saw in vision his own yet unborn great-grandson Noah. As it were, Enoch obtained advance information about the coming of the flood from his yet unborn great-grandson, a sort of circumstance there that is significant and interesting. We come to the era of Noah himself, and his father's name was Lamech, unnamed wife, and Father Lamech was 182 years old at the birth of Noah. The ancestors of Noah, great-grandfather was the prophet Enoch. He was already in heaven, but not by death, but by translation. No one, as I have said, as I emphasize on numerous occasions, no one goes to heaven when they die. Not even did Jesus go to heaven when he died. He had to be alive to go to heaven. Enoch was alive when he went to heaven through the experience that is listed in the Bible, and we call it translation. Yes, Enoch was looking down on the events associated with the great flood. No other human being in heaven at that particular time. That was the great-grandfather, the prophet Enoch. Grandfather Methuselah, age 269 at the birth of Noah. God Methuselah got the information regarding the flood from his father Enoch, and he could tell Noah about the flood information in these circumstances in advance. In other words, Noah, as a boy, grew up knowing the end of the world would be coming by a flood. A little bit like Adventist children today, including the fortunate little ones that are in your own congregation, they are growing up taking it for granted and knowing full well the end of the world will come when Jesus returns. It's just part of the culture that they are learning, and it is certainly significant in their experience. We come down the flow of time to Noah, and Genesis chapter 4 verse 22 tells us that the sister of Tubal-Cain was Naamah, and the word Naamah is the feminine name of Noah, feminine version of the name Noah. Josephus, in his Jewish history, page 27, tells us that Naamah was a descendant from Cain, highly significant back there in ancient times. A Jewish rabbi way back many thousands of years ago said that Naamah, the daughter of Lamech and sister to Tubal-Cain, was Noah's wife. Jewish history informs us of this particular fact. Now, we remember that Enoch became a preacher of righteousness, making known to the people what God had revealed to him. And Noah, you might remember that Noah was preaching amongst the people back there regarding righteousness, regarding the events that were coming. And Noah's wife, Naamah, or her family, obviously were a convert to the true religion under the preaching ministry of Enoch. The children of Noah and Naamah, Genesis 5:32, three boys before the flood, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Genesis 10:21, Japheth, the elder, was born when Noah was 500 years old. Genesis 11:10, Shem was the middle son of Noah. Born was Noah when Noah was 502 years old. Genesis 9:24, Ham was the youngest son of Noah. All three sons were married before the flood. We don't know their wives' names, and they had no children up to that stage. Now, there were additional items of warning that were granted to the people living back there at that era. Genesis chapter 6, verse 7, the Lord said, I will destroy mankind, whom I have created from the face of the earth. Genesis 6:13, the end of all flesh is come before me. Genesis 6:17, I, said the Lord, bring a flood of waters upon the earth to destroy all flesh, and everything that is in the earth will die. Vegetation as well. Patriarchs and Prophets 62, the Garden of Eden, as I have mentioned previously, I'm sure, the Garden of Eden remained upon the earth long after man had become an outcast from its pleasant pathways. When the tide of iniquity overspread the world and the wickedness of men determined their destruction by a flood of waters, the hand that had planted Eden withdrew it from the earth. 30 pages later on, amid the prevailing corruption, Methuselah, Noah, and many others labored to keep alive the knowledge of the true God. Not only did they have prophetic information, advanced information of what was coming from Adam onwards, not only did they have that, it was sort of culturally known in their society, in their culture. Not only did they have that, but they also had a specific time prophecy. I read this, Genesis chapter 6, verse 3. The Lord said, My spirit shall not always strive with man, yet his days shall be 120 years. Nothing symbolic about this prophecy. It was a statement that was made to Noah. He conveyed the information to the people, and very frequently he indicated, God has told me, 120 years. When the 120 years are over, it's the finish. Interestingly, we in our world of today have a time prophecy, a symbolic time prophecy found in the book of Daniel, which of course we will be studying again once more as we study this information found in the book of Daniel in our next quarter's Sabbath school lessons. 120 years before the flood, the Lord, by a holy angel, declared to Noah his purpose and directed him to build an ark. While he was building the ark, he was to preach that God would bring a flood of water upon the earth to destroy the wicked at the end of the 120 years. Building the big boat. Genesis 6:16. Make a roof for the ark. Set the door of the ark in its side. Make it with lower, second, and third decks. The ESV translation, Genesis 6:16, in the Holy Scriptures. I read, God gave Noah the exact dimensions of the ark and explicit directions in regard to its construction in every particular. Noah could not do his own thing in making the boat. He had to follow God's command. He did so, and he did so willingly. Human wisdom could not have devised a structure of so great strength and durability. It was constructed like the hull of a ship, like its hull, but in some respects it more nearly resembled a house. It was three stories high, with but one door, a massive, huge door on one side. The light was admitted at the top, and the different apartments inside were so arranged that all were lighted. Where was the shipyard? Patriarchs and Prophets 95. He began to construct that immense boat on dry ground. But so was the Queen Mary, and so was the Titanic, and all of these other big ships. They were built on dry ground, and then afterwards they were launched. What was the size of this boat? Genesis 6:15. The length of the ark shall be 300 cubits, the breadth of it 50 cubits, and the height of it 30 cubits. Now, a cubit was from fingertip to elbow tip. And you know, even our modern measurements have a similarity of circumstance. We talk about an inch, knuckle inch. We talk about a foot, which is a little bit more than a foot our size today, fortunately. We talk about a yard, which is one pace, all body measurements. And so they had one that we don't use today, and that was the one measured there from the fingertip to the elbow in that way. Now, the ship were being measured in those with those dimensions, with the cubit. We must also remember that people living before the flood were much larger than people are in the world of today. We are a 50% midget from the original. And so therefore, their cubit would have been longer than the cubit of today. In other words, the Ark of Noah's day was as large as the tragic Titanic, or the Queen Mary, or the Queen Elizabeth, or the largest of the tourist ships that are in use in our world of today. A massive, massive ship was the Ark that was constructed back there at that time. Not only was it large, but it took them 120 years to build this ship, a massive project. What was the construction material? Genesis 6:14. Build a large boat. Yeah, the big boat. Build a large boat from cypress wood and waterproof it with tar inside and out. Then construct decks and stalls throughout its interior, the internal structure of the ark. The material that was employed in the construction of the ark was the cypress or gopher wood, which would be untouched by decay for hundreds of years. Unless the wood is treated in new houses today, it doesn't even last your lifetime. Every piece of timber was closely fitted, and every seam was covered with pitch. It was made entirely of wood, no metal parts. Who was the construction staff? Patriarchs and Prophets 94. The building of this immense structure was a slow and laborious process. On account of the great size of the trees and the nature of the wood, much more labor was required then than now to prepare timber, even with the greater strength which men then possessed in ancient times. No electrical tools either. Methuselah and his sons assisted in building the ark. There were others too who aided Noah in building the ark. Some of the carpenters that he employed in building the ark believed the message, but they died before the flood. So these circumstances were there for these ancient people. Now, what was the public reaction when Noah began to build the ark? What was the public reaction when Noah began to explain the prophetic time period? 120 years, when it's over, it's over. Their world was a different world from what we know today. Multitudes came from every direction to see the strange sight and to hear the earnest, fervent words of this singular preacher. You know, we travel in our world of today, don't we? The Empire State Building, the great statue there in the harbor, and the great arch inland from here, and the Eiffel Tower, and the Taj Mahal, and if you please, the great building there in Sydney Harbour, not only the bridge, but the building that is used for musical presentations. We travel the world to see it. And here the people in the flood era, or the era before the flood, they flocked there to the location. Multitudes came from every direction to see this strange sight, a massive, supersized boat, and to hear the earnest, fervent words of the singular preacher. What was the change in public attitude? Many at first appeared to receive the warning, yet they did not turn to God with true repentance. I suppose we can belong to a Christian religion, but where is the experience that goes with it? Many at first appeared to receive the warning, yet they did not turn to God with true repentance. Some were deeply convicted, and they would have heeded the words of warning, but there were so many to jest and ridicule it that they partook of the same spirit, and they were soon among the boldest and most defiant scoffers. As sin became general, they finally declared that the divine law was no longer in force. Ten Commandments, divine law no longer in force before the flood. What about in our world of today? They tell us that the divine law is no longer in force. What about the crime in the community in this country, and I think in pretty well every other country in the world? Now, the world before the flood, what was it like if you lived over there? Patriarchs and Prophets 90. The hills were crowned with majestic trees supporting the fruit-laden branches of the vine. The vast garden-like plains were clothed with verdure and sweet with the fragrance of a thousand flowers. The fruits of the earth were in great variety and almost without limit. The trees far surpassed in size, beauty, and perfect proportion any now to be found on planet Earth. Gold, silver, precious stones existed in great abundance. Beautiful gardens, their long winding avenues overhung with fruit-bearing trees in all of all descriptions in all directions. There were many giants, men of great stature and strength, renowned for wisdom, skillful in devising the most cunning and wonderful works. They employed the gold and silver, the precious stones and the choice wood in the construction of habitations for themselves, and they endeavored to excel one another in beautifying their dwellings with the most skillful workmanship. You know, they were building their houses way back there in such a way that it was a wonderful world to live in, all excepting the problems, the sins and the crimes of society. Sort of a bit of like that in our world of today. Patriarchs and Prophets 83, they had no books, no written records. It was not necessary for them to have these things in their ancient world. Now, what were the sins of the people living back there? I read in our writings a whole long list. May I go through this long list as it is given? Patriarchs and Prophets and other writings, they were absorbed in worldly pleasure. There was drunkenness. They worshipped idols. And in Christianity today, they do the same thing. There was polygamy. They had gluttonous feasts. There were corrupt passions. There was warfare. Do we have that today? Indeed, we do. And some brave people losing their lives in those circumstances. There was warfare. There was crime of every type. Wretchedness. Not everybody had a good lifestyle. Murder on a frequent scale. Deeds of violence. They also conducted human sacrifices. We have human sacrifices in this country. 1 million every year. What about all of the other countries? Neither the marriage relationship nor the rights of property were respected. Whoever coveted the wives or the possessions of his neighbor took them by force, and men exulted in their deeds of violence. They delighted in destroying the life of animals and the use of flesh food rendered them still more cruel and bloodthirsty, until they came to regard human life with astonishing indifference. If there was one sin above another which called for the destruction of the human race by the flood, it was the base crime of amalgamation of man and beast. Genetic engineering, human-animal crosses. They have tried that in our world too. Now the preparation for the launching of the big boat. The ark was finished exactly as God had directed. Noah and his assistants constructed the ark in exactly the way that God had outlined that situation. They do that in the manufacturing of motor cars today, don't they? The staff there in the factories making these various products cannot do their own thing. They have to fulfill the requirements as they are given. The ark was finished exactly as God had directed. Noah preserved seed and took it with him in the ark. Seed for replanting in the new world. Genesis 6:21. You are also to take for yourself every kind of food that is eaten and gather it as food for yourselves and for the animals. What was the long list of food they had to prepare to take into the ark? Who knows how much is going to be eaten by the animals? Who knows how much is going to be eaten by the humans inside the ark in 1 year? Or if you want to be closely accurate, 1 year and 17 days. Or in reality, some leftover food had to be available when they got out of the ark, because there was nothing, absolutely zero, nothing that was growing on planet Earth when they got out. It was a muddy world. The Bible says, God commanded Noah, you are also to take for yourself every kind of food that is eaten and gather it as food for yourselves and for the animals. I read another statement. Noah had laid in store immense quantities of food for man and beast, enough for a whole year plus 7 days, 17 days, plus what they needed when they got out. No refrigeration, no fresh food, only dried food. Then there was the final appeal, the final appeal. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5. God spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person. I think maybe I've mentioned this before, but have you not seen the artist's representation of a happy, smiling Noah on a sunny Sunday afternoon, perhaps? And the other kids in the little line behind him, and they're entering into the ark with a big, big, happy smile. That's not the way that it happened. It didn't occur that way whatsoever. This is what I read. Patriarchs and Prophets 97. Now the servant of God made his last solemn appeal to the people. Noah was not the first person into the ark with his seven tribe following behind him. Noah was the last man to go into that boat. Why? Because he had some words for the people out there. This is what we read in the Bible. Let me see here. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5. God spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person to enter the ark, not the first one. I read on. Now the servant of God made his last solemn appeal to the people with an agony of desire that words cannot express. Noah entreated them to seek a refuge while it might be made. A massive, huge tour boat filled with animals and sufficient food for a whole year, plus whatever might be needed afterwards. Only eight people going in, and everybody else that was in the area at the time standing around watching what was going on. Noah's appeal, he said, look, I gave you a time prophecy, 120 years. If you check your calendar, that time is now up. I've been building this boat 120 years, a massive project, preaching and teaching. You can see the signs of the times, multitudes of sin in the world, open warfare, murder, stealing, lying, hatred, abominations, adultery, each sin that you can think of. I have brothers and sisters, he said, out here, family members, relatives, cousins, uncles, aunts, friends, some of those who assisted in the building of the boat. You've heard the story. You know it's going to happen. Now's your opportunity. Then Noah was the eighth person to go into the ark. It was over. No, wait. Not quite. God still gave one more opportunity. Genesis chapter 7, verse 2, it says here that Noah, you should take seven pairs of every clean animal with you, male and female, and also the unclean in pairs. And so what happened? This is what happened. After Noah made his last appeal, angels were sent to collect from the forest and from the field the animals which God had created, and they followed in two by two. The sky seemed to be clouded with birds of every description. They came flying to the ark, two by two, male and female. For 7 days, one whole week, Sabbath as well, these animals and birds were coming into the ark, and the world looked on with wonder, some with fear. They'd never seen anything like this before. What's wrong with them? Noah had told them what is happening. Now you're looking at it. You can see it. It's an observation that everybody can witness. What's wrong with you? And you know, when the evening came, those people that were watching could go home, evening meal, sleep. I guess they talked about what they saw for a whole week. Strange events. This big boat, this guy talking about the end, flood coming, and now we see the animals and the birds coming in this way. Every day for a whole week, just the same thing. Day by day, they could see it. And even now, the door was still open for that whole week. If they wanted to, they could walk in there as well. The period of their probation was about to expire. A flash of dazzling light was seen, and a cloud of glory more vivid than the lightning descended from heaven and hovered above the entrance of the ark. I read this again. A flash of dazzling light was seen, and a cloud of glory more vivid than the lightning descended from heaven and hovered above the entrance of the ark. An angel is seen by the scoffing multitude. They're having a picnic. They're having a banquet. They are having a party out there watching what's going on. An angel is seen by the scoffing multitude descending from heaven, clothed with brightness like the lightning. He closes that massive door and then takes his course upward to heaven again. That massive door was slowly swung to its face. Now it is all over, gone, finished. On the next occasion, we will present the information about life in the big boat. 1 whole year and 17 days extra. But what did Jesus say about Noah? What was his reference in these things? On the last journey to Jerusalem, Jesus was in Perea in Jordan, and it was the autumn of the year 30 AD. St. Luke tells us of the words of Jesus, Luke 17, 26 and 27 in the King James Version. As it was in the days of Noah, so shall it be also in the days of the Son of Man. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage. Girls are given in marriage, that guy has the privilege of taking the girl. They did eat, they drank, they married wives, they were given in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and then the flood came and destroyed them all. Nothing wrong with that, except in excess or in a sinful circumstance. Now, Jesus was just a matter of short time from his own death when he was making this reference. That was the first occasion when Jesus referred to Noah. There's a second occasion. It was Sunday, April the 22nd, 5 BC, in the early twilight of the evening. Jesus was seated upon the Mount of Olives, and he had with him Peter, John, James, and Andrew. Before them lay Jerusalem in its glory, now bathed in the light of the declining sun. The temple attracted all eyes. In stately grandeur, it towered above all else, seeming to point towards heaven, as if directing the people to the only true and living God. While the westering sun was tinting and gilding the heavens, its resplendent glory lighted up the pure white marble of the temple walls and sparkled on its gold-capped pillars. It had the appearance of a massive structure of snow set with golden pinnacles. It caught the splendor of the setting sun, shining as if with a glory borrowed from heaven. Matthew 24, first gospel, 24th chapter, verses 37 to 39. This is what we read. As the days of Noah were, said Jesus, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, nothing wrong with that, excepting in sin or in wrong, until the day that Noah entered into the ark. And they knew not until the flood came and took them all away. So shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. We come down to the second coming. Another storm is coming, Patriarchs and Prophets 101. The earth will again be swept by the desolating wrath of God, and sin and sinners will be destroyed. There is one antidote, salvation by faith. Another storm is coming. The earth will again be swept by the desolating wrath of God, and sin and sinners will be destroyed. Desire of Ages 6:32. Christ is coming in the clouds and with great glory. A multitude of shining angels will attend him. He will come to raise the dead and to change the living saints from glory to glory. No secret rapture here. Christ is coming with clouds and with great glory. A multitude of shining angels will attend him. He will come to raise the dead and to change the living saints from glory to glory. He will come to honor those who have loved him and have kept his commandments and take them to himself. He has not forgotten them. He has not forgotten us, nor his promise. Jesus said, and I emphasize, I will come again, he declared in triumph. Divine intervention. God's intervention in the days of Noah, God's intervention in our world today, and God's intervention at the time of the second coming. Next time we will look at the life in the big boat. But in the meantime, we can remember that Noah had a parallel flood for that time and fire coming in our day.